Welcome back. You heard his voice in the previous hour when we were both talking to Ray Long. My guest for almost this entire hour is my friend Richard Reeder. I had you. What was the name of your book, Richard? About was that about the L, the story collection? What was it called?
What was it called? 1001 Train Rides in Chicago.
That's right, Rides in Chicago.
1001, the Ben Hecht, 1001.
Sure, Afternoons. Yeah. Tell me more about, I know a little bit, tell the listeners a little bit more about your background. You've had a very interesting background before diving fully into the world of literature.
Yeah, so probably half of my career, you know, by career I meant like 9 to 5
Job.
Yeah. Half was in government and half was working in social services, both as counselors and teachers and mentors, and then later on administrators. But I worked for the mayor's office of employment and training, later named the mayor's office of workforce development, the city of Chicago, for 12 years at different times.
Which mayors?
Well, I started with Mayor Byrne. Then I worked a little bit with Mayor Washington. Then I left city government, and I became the executive director of the Polish Welfare Association, later named the Polish American Association. And for 2 years, we had the largest non-Latino legalization program. This is 1987, 1988. We legalized 5,000 people under the old amnesty program.
Oh, wow. And fantastic.
And also we worked with refugees coming from martial law in Poland. But then I came back with Richard M. Daley to my office. And I worked for the city another 5 years after that. So I
you
worked in government.
You have always been, as long as I've known you, a person fully in the world of literature, too.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
It's not just as, hey, I like to read books kind of thing. It's a little more in-depth than that.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've had a literary blog for the last 10 years. I talk about various literary events happening, not just in Chicago, around the country, around the world. Sometimes I put in some of my writing in my literary blog. As you know, I was the president of the board of the Chicago Literary Hall of Fame.
Sure, sure.
For 3 years. And I currently, well, for the last 9 years, I've been doing moderating a Chicago-themed book club at the Cliff Dwellers, 200 South Michigan. I've been doing that for 9 years now.
Under the auspices of who is that?
Under the Cliff Dwellers.
Really?
Yeah, under the Cliff Dwellers. Yeah,
and you can go to the Cliff Dwellers website and
yeah, and you can anybody can come to. You don't have to be a member of the Cliff Dwellers, and
that's one of the things. Let's talk about. We've both been there a few times. It's one of the greatest rooms in the history of Chicago.
Absolutely, and I encourage your audience to come to some of the events there. And I also do my cousins own Max and Benny's restaurant up in Northbrook, and I started a Jewish themed kind of with the interest of the Jewish community a book club that meets at Max and Benny's in the restaurant in the deli, and that's been going on for now. It was suspended for 2 years with COVID, but we're starting again with Ron Balson, who you know,
Ronald Balson. God, I love
Ron. Ron's coming, you know, back in May 16th at Max and Benny. So that's another thing I do. I moderate.
Ron Balson is one of the. He's a lawyer, but has always been interested in writing. He's one of the great success stories.
Oh, I know, I know. He said, and his first book was self published, and then St. Martin's gave him a contract, I think, for 5 books.
Well, I'll never not to get off you, but what happened was someone bought it here. Sent it to their daughter, who was an editor at, I don't know, Crown, Simon & Schuster or something. She said, oh, wait. He said, Mom, why are you giving me a book? And she said, it's the best book I've ever read in my life. So this woman was reading it on the train coming into Manhattan from Connecticut or something. And the train conductor, who had never spoken to her in 20 years of riding the train, came up to her and said, that's the best book I've ever read. And she started, I think maybe at St. Martin's, but Ron's a wonderful man.
Yeah, very nice man.
Give him my best. When did you, and writing, is a difficult thing. I know you have two previous books.
Correct. This is my third book.
This book is called The Curious Odyssey of Rudolph Bloom. It is a terribly inventive, the narrative's inventive, I think. The story is wildly inventive, and it is an outgrowth of you teaching one of the most difficult novels. I don't know if you agree with that. It's a tough read. I mean, I've read it twice in my life because I think the first time I didn't understand it.
It's easy compared to Finnegan's Wake, Rick.
Oh, I'll give you that. But you have taught Ulysses
three times.
Why?
Well, I credit someone by the name of Stephen Dietrich. I took a class in 2007 at the Newberry Library in their adult education program. And I, like so many other people, were frustrated reading Ulysses. It's a tough book.
Yeah.
I took Steve Dietrich's class. It was the best class I ever had on any level. I'm talking better than elementary school, high school, college, graduate school, whatever. It was the best class. And Steve just explained everything about Ulysses that brought out the basic humanity and the inventiveness of Joyce, it was the great modernistic novel of the English language.
Had you tackled it before?
I tried it twice.
And never did you finish?
No, I was frustrated. I finished. Yeah. I finished, but I kind of skimmed at the end, and I wasn't enjoying it. You know how it is when you don't enjoy a book.
Of course.
But with Steve, not only did I enjoy the book, I loved the book. And Steve passed away a couple of years after I took that class, and it was always a dream of mine to teach Ulysses in Steve's style, which I did.
You did it twice at Oakton College and
twice at Oakton College and once for the big book series at the Glencoe Public Library. I launched their big book series.
Who was drawn to those classes? People similar. I think I'm going to make a generalization here, Richard Reeder, that the people who might be drawn to a class like that, as you were first drawn to Dietrich's class, are people who wanted to understand this certifiably great novel.
Right, and hopefully I gave them some insights that Steve gave me that I could share with them, and it's a wonderful book, but there was a character in Ulysses. If I can get into
this, we've got to take a break in a couple of minutes.
But Leopold Bloom is one of the major characters, a fictional character. Ulysses is a novel, but there was something about Leopold Bloom's father that was really never touched by not just teachers like Steve, but also by academics. I mean, there were some pretty prominent academics in Joyce studies, such as Richard Ellman. But the mystery about his father, Rudolph Bloom, a Jewish man born in the Austro-Hungarian Empire, the Habsburg Empire, who was born right around the time of his father was just living in all these different cities.
That's mentioned in Ulysses, right? I don't recall.
Yeah, it was mentioned was Leopold Bloom's father, Rudolph, lived in different cities. He lived in Milan. He lived in Budapest, Vienna, and London, and Dublin. And he winds up committing suicide in a small little Irish town called Ennis, where he was a proprietor of a hotel. Okay. And why did he commit suicide? Nobody really speculated on that. Why did he convert at the age of 50? Why did he convert from Judaism to Christianity? Why? And why did he leave Dublin to go to Ennis to buy a hotel? All these were questions out there.
And you answer, well, that's why I find this so wonderful. Yeah. The great thing about this book, The Curious Odyssey of Rudolph Bloom, is that Richard Reeder answers those questions in a fantastic, I think, and fantastically creative and artful way. We will take a commercial break and discuss that at some length. It's a Mrs. Doyle who finds his body at 9:15 a.m. on June 28th, 1886, leaving you on the proverbial edge of your chair. We'll be back. It is less than 100 pages, but it is a richly detailed and wildly inventive and terribly satisfying novella, The Curious Odyssey of Rudolph Bloom, which takes up the story of Leopold Bloom's daddy from James Joyce's Ulysses. That character, who is not mentioned often, if memory serves, in Ulysses, really grabbed you.
Right.
Grabbed you to the point where you... See, one of the things, Richard Reeder, that I'm so impressed by is the narrative of this. There are a lot of ways you could have written this book.
True.
Why this way?
Well,
what happens is there is a suicide at the beginning of the book. I'm not spoiling anything for you. There's a suicide, and body's found. They're trying to figure out. They're trying to figure out why and different ways of doing this, and but sent off to Oscar Wilde, the famous Oscar Wilde, is a manuscript. And Oscar Wilde writes, chapter 5 begins in Richard Reeder's book, that the letter accompanying this manuscript, Oscar Wilde writes, his letter indicated that his life was a truly fascinating adventure and that a creative man such as myself might find his memoir of interest. The last two sentences of his letter intrigued me immensely. They read, Mr. Wilde, you are a man who can understand what life was to me, and that is why I must send this to you. Feel free to change my bad words to make them beautiful. Those are a couple of nice sentences. You inventively create the life of Rudolph Bloom, which he details in a portion of the book.
Yeah, and there's just a few mentions of Rudolph Bloom in Joyce's Ulysses, but if Leopold Bloom,
who is also a character in this book.
And I call him Poldy, for Leopold. But I think what sparked why I wanted to write a book about Rudolph was there was a book written by an Irish author. Now, this is the first prequel, by the way, ever to James Joyce's Ulysses. First ever.
That surprise you?
Yes.
Yeah, it does me too.
It certainly does.
It does me too.
Yeah. Now, there was a sequel written by an Irish writer named Peter Costello, and Mr. Costello briefly mentions Rudolph Bloom, and Rudolph Bloom was mentioned as, first of all, a trader, T-R-A-D-E-R, a trader in cheap trinkets and beads and things like that. Later on, a moneylender. And I said, wait a second, Leopold Bloom is such a curious character. He's a character that exudes humanity. He's a character that has complexity of thought, interested in so many different things. He had to be influenced by a father who had similar interests, curiosity, to really inculcate that to his son. And so I said, I'm going to create someone, a character, that is going to be one of the more interesting people in the 19th century. And when you think about where Rudolph Bloom was in this book, in all the different places and all the different kinds of occupations,
and the two major relationships of his life.
Absolutely.
Talk about the first one.
Okay.
Well, see, the first one did not result in the birth of Leopold Bloom. That's for sure. What was it?
Well, the first relationship. So I made the book into, I don't want to give away too much.
Yeah, sure, no,
about
no,
the book,
no,
but
no,
I made it into a parody of a late Victorian sexuality.
Mm-hmm.
And Rudolph, who didn't marry until midlife, until he was in his 50s, which was more than midlife in the 19th centuries, he was a gay man.
Yep.
He was a gay man, and he not only had a love of his life, a man who was love of his life, but it was a man who was physically, who didn't have great physical attributes. He was a deformed, he was a hunchback, and he found beauty in that man, in that relationship. That was his first.
Seriously, this book exists. It's, as I said, it's less than 100 pages, and there's a lot going on here.
Yeah.
There is a lot going on here. Was it fun to create the character such as Mrs. It must have been great.
Absolutely.
Mrs. Doyle, for instance, is a charmer, I find.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the lady who took care of the hotel back in Ennis. And I'm just trying to think of who is this a widow, but she really cared about the proprietor, and he spoke. He wasn't an Irishman. He became an Irishman through marriage and relocation. But he spoke in this German accent, and Mrs. Doyle was a conscientious Irish woman who wanted to make sure that business ran well, and I just wanted to create that in her character.
Here is her speaking. Here is her voice after, again, 9:15 a.m. discovering a body. She writes that Mr. Bloom was always the gentleman. He made me feel more like a family member than the manager of his hotel. He was such an interesting man, having lived in so many different places in the world, grand cities such as Vienna and Florence. I found his unusual accent quite charming, although it was a bit hard to understand all the words he said. She's a charmer. I found her really delightful. There's also a constable in this thing. There is a lawyer, Inspector O'Neill. This just must have been a joy. What was the writing like? Because it is, you know, you're bouncing things around, and
writing,
did it come easily to you?
Writing fiction, I find it such a fascinating process, Rick.
Yeah.
Writing fiction. It's something I hadn't done really until, you know, I turned about 70. And it's just so... The characters, I always heard that the characters are going to come live. You're going to create characters. And as I was writing, the character was coming live. Mm. And there was Rudolph, there was Mrs. Doyle, there were all the ancillary characters. And then...
How does Bram Stoker and Oscar Wilde come into your mind?
Well, they were both born in Dublin, Protestants born in Dublin, who mm-hmm. wind up in London. And it gets into this whole parody of late Victorian sexuality. Mm-hmm. They were both married to women, but they were close friends back in college at Trinity in Dublin, and they stayed close friends. And I talked about the club that they were a member of.
Yeah.
And I always loved Oscar Wilde, and I wanted to try to get Oscar Wilde's voice as his voice in the book. And I hope I was successful. And the same thing with Stoker. And really, Stoker and Wilde were good friends. But once Stoker, after Wilde was convicted when he had his affair
yeah.
and he went to jail, and Stoker didn't want anything to do with his good buddy, his friend for life. So I wanted to really make... I really wanted to make Wilde kind of a decent fellow and Stoker more of a rogue.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. Very interesting. I'm trying to find this section. I should be able to find this stuff easily. It's where Oscar Wilde says here, you know, Bram Stoker says, I would not be concerned about that, Mr. Stoker. This library is, well, I'm going to read it later.
Okay,
but... Here is when Leopold Bloom is born. Okay, ready for this? Our boy came into the world at the Combe Lying In Hospital, tiny and a bit jaundiced, but otherwise healthy. We named him Leopold in honor of my father, who would have been horrified at his namesake's baptism at the Church of St. Nicholas Without, and the decision to forego circumcision, a practice that Ellen considered primitive and barbaric. That is just a bit of Richard Reeder's A Curious Odyssey of Rudolph Bloom. Rudolph Bloom does come off in this book, ladies and gentlemen, as a fascinating, fascinating character, and that is absolutely, Richard, to your credit. Inspired by that wildly difficult book, Ulysses by James Joyce, which took me two reads to get through and into. I did not have Richard Reeder nor his mentor, Stephen, in this case, Stephen Diedrich, to light the way for me. You must understand that Richard Reeder's new book, The Curious Odyssey of Rudolph Bloom, which is a fictionalized tale of Leopold Bloom's dad, Ulysses is tough to get into. This is a joy to get into, and it should not intimidate you. It's less than 100 pages. It is written in a forthright and compelling fashion. And do you find, Richard, if people said, "Oh man, I couldn't even get into Ulysses. Why do I want to read about his dad?" Have you found anybody saying that?
Oh yeah. Absolutely. It's a fun read.
It is a fun read, and it's a very, it's a story with some depth, of course, but it's also a fun read. It's a, you know, early on they're trying to figure out why he killed himself or how he did it, and you do learn in the end, and you meet Bram Stoker before he writes writes Dracula.
I've got these minor characters in there, kind of Zelig-like, like Karl Marx walking his dog on Hampton Heath.
You went to Ireland to research this, did you?
Well, I went to Ireland to go to Bloomsday at the James Joyce Center and to go to the Abbey Theater. But since I was in Galway, not too far from Ennis, I decided to go to Ennis and do some research.
Were they helpful?
Oh, wonderful librarian. Mr. Byrne, Peter Byrne, was an excellent librarian. He had all these 1886, June 28th, 1886 newspapers out for me on microfiche. And he walked me around. I saw the Queen's Hotel, which was still there. It's some kind of coffee shop downstairs now. A wonderful librarian, just a wonderful librarian who I thanked profusely in the acknowledgments.
Yeah. Well, what's noodling around in your literary brain these days? I mean, this must be very satisfying for you. And I think, as we've just talked over this 45 minutes, it came once you got the story that you wanted to tell. I think it probably came fairly easily for you, and characters would pop into your head, and you'd put them on the page.
Yeah. That's true. I don't know. I'm doing some short stories, Chicago themed short stories, and I always have on my mind, maybe there's the great Chicago novel, a fictional account of something, great Chicago novel. Here I am, at a certain age, a septuagenarian, just like Rudolph Bloom, and maybe this septuagenarian has another novel. Maybe this is novella. Maybe I have a novel in me. I don't know. Maybe or maybe not.
Let me ask you. I mean, I'll toss out, Adventures Volume Arch and some others. You think anyone's come close to writing what would, and this is a stupid question, it's a stupid concept, the great Chicago novel?
No.
Yeah.
No. No, and I was the guy behind the Bellow Centennial. I mean, I taught Bellow and all that thing, and I liked him as a novelist.
Yeah.
Did he write the great Chicago novel? I don't think Augie March is the great Chicago novel. None of Bellow's novels are the great Chicago novel. And certainly Nelson Algren's are not the great Chicago novel.
Yeah.
Meyer Levin did some good work, but Ben Heck never really did. He wrote a couple of novels, but they didn't really, they weren't that successful, not like his short stories. No, I don't think it's been written. It's probably going to be a different generation, but no, the great Chicago novel has not been written yet.
Interesting. What other things are you teaching? What kind of teaching assignments are coming up for you?
I taught about four. I've been teaching through. I taught at the Newberry Library the last few years, their adult education program. So I taught a class on Ralph Ellison's Invisible Man.
Mm.
I co-taught a class on William Faulkner. And I taught a class. I called it Crime and Punishment in Chicago.
That's
and,
a good title for yeah, a class. What'd you teach
and
in there?
Richard Wright's Native Son and Meyer Levin's Compulsion. So those are the kinds of classes that I've taught, and of course, I have not taught Ulysses for a few years, but now I've created something that has been acknowledged by Joycean studies as an important piece of scholarship. So I read something that Trinity College put out, Modernistic Joyce's Studies, and my book, this novella, got into it. Yeah.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so I'm glad.
Yeah, you were telling me that this is the only...
The only prequel to Ulysses in 100 years.
I am so stunned by that, because that book is certainly a influential. I don't know if people do into the style of writing, but an incredibly influential book in this century.
Mm-hmm.
Why? No, it just took you.
It took 100 years.
Took a kid from Mather High School. A kid from Mather High School. When you went there, was Wolfie's across it?
Wolfie's on Peterson. That was there. Right, right.
Good.
I lived on London, California. I took Jerry's bus down California Avenue to Mather High School. Got off there.
Did someone spark your initial interest in literature, because you are one of the most well-read and interesting guys to talk to about books?
I had a high school teacher. He was a Latin teacher. His name was David Bush. And David Bush, everybody took his class because it was an easy class. He gave, you know, you got a top grade and all that. But he would talk about literature. He would talk about Latin for 10 minutes, and for, you know, 40 minutes he would talk about literature. Mm. And he was the guy, I think, that just influenced me as a teenager to start reading, and, you know, diverse reading. And I just had a wonderful teacher in high school.
Yeah,
not an English teacher, a Latin teacher.
No.
He became, you know, the spark for me for literature.
Probably certainly not around anymore.
He was a wonderful man.
He would be quite proud of you. And the book is also, it's a very handsome design. Who's the publisher?
Propertius Press. Propertius Press. And
they did a beautiful job with this.
Yeah, beautiful, small, woman-owned indie publishing house in Virginia. They publish a dozen books a year, and I sent it to her, and Susanna, the publisher, said, I love the voices. I loved the voice for
Fantastic.
Your main character, and I love the voice for Oscar Wilde and Bram Stoker.
One of the great things now, when someone ever asks a person, have you ever read Ulysses? You can say, no, but I read the better book, The Curious Odyssey of Rudolph Bloom.
And it's a book for every person.
That is no question. Do not be intimidated by this. It's as accessible and entertaining as any book I can remember reading. Richard, it's always a pleasure to see you.
Oh, Rick, thank you for
always having, a pleasure to see
thank
you.
Thank you for having me on. I do appreciate
my
it.
My pleasure. It's a pleasure to read you, too.
Thank you.
We're going to take a break, and then we'll find out about an event in Edgewater Saturday.
Ha ha ha.